This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Way home on Grant and Danny on this Friday installment. 106.7 The Fan with you. Looking forward to talking about the Nats and Major League Baseball. News on the MLB and the Players Association coming together on some parameters of what a deal will look like if and when the season launches again with Jesse Docherty in a few minutes. Plus, a couple of college hoops things I wanted to tackle. And I know, Danny, you wanted to get into with Chris Nocke, including what would a tournament run have looked like for Maryland. Plus, I got some numbers on the financials of just how crippling not having a tournament is going to be for the teams, both in D1 and in the D2 and 3 ranks. So we'll get to all that on the Blitz in the next few minutes, jam-packed today, but let's start you off on the gridiron. Chris Russell, an NFL and a Redskins insider, slash, he always enjoy having you on the program. Sure, you heard Vince Taylor, the agent for Trent Williams, on the show yesterday. What'd you think of his interview with us?
Well, it was a great job by you guys. I think you asked all the pertinent questions and follow-ups, and I think Vince sounded like he got himself in a little bit of trouble when you doubled down on the $16 million thing after he roundly denied, or soundly denied, I should say, the $20 million report. Listen, there's, I mean, I don't want to say no chance, but there's about a 0.3% chance that Trent Williams is going to be willing to pay for $16 million if he can do anything at all to control it, just because Lane Johnson, who's a right tackle, and right tackles are more important than they used to be, certainly, is now making $18 million a year. $16 million is Taylor Lewan, and that contract is about a year and a half old. That is the left tackle market, but it's not the offensive tackle market. So I don't see how he'd be willing to do that unless you buy into the theory that because his market is shrinking so much, and I do kind of buy into this, that he may, if he chooses to play and if he moves forward with, you know, with wanting the trade, which every indication is that, you know, then maybe he's got to sign like a short-term extension type thing to prove that he's back, where he gets more guaranteed money and it's a little bit less, or maybe a lot less, than what he originally thought and wanted.
Russell, and Vince Taylor's statement about the Redskins after Quentin Dunbar got traded, and it sounded like they were ticked off. He said the Redskins were not negotiating in good faith. Then yesterday with us, he said a couple people have told him, or teams have told him, that the Redskins don't know what they're doing. These are heavy, huge accusations. In your opinion, and from what you've heard, do the Redskins know what they're doing here?
Yeah, I think Vince thought he could push around a head coach who has first-time full power in football operations and a quote-unquote scout who's essentially a de facto general manager, and I think he found out how tough and how steely-minded Ron Rivera and Kyle Smith are. Now, that doesn't mean ultimately, guys, they're going to be right and they're going to get a better left tackle than Trent Williams. I'm not saying that, but they thought, I believe, Vince Taylor, Trent Williams thought, oh, we'll take advantage of these guys by playing nice and playing kissy-kissy, and they got smacked right in the face, because so far, Kyle Smith and Ron Rivera haven't flinched. And I go back to, you know, look, it might expose them on the football field if and when we do actually get football back, but when you're trying to install a culture, when you're trying to set some sort of system of accountability, maturity, and responsibility up. You don't just grovel down to a name that you don't know, that you haven't worked with. You say, hey, look, everybody's got a clean slate. Everybody's got a clean canvas. Let's prove it to each other. Let's work together. And that's, by all accounts, that's what Ron and Kyle wanted to do, especially Ron. And I can't blame him for it. And Vince and Trent thought, hey, we're Trent Williams. We deserve better than that. And they tried to take advantage of a situation with a couple of rooks. And I, at least right now, it looks like they got slapped in the face.
Yeah, it seems to me like they know what they're doing. The question is, are they asking for too much? And I don't think that they are, but I want to get your thoughts on that. Mike Garofalo today kind of spitballed at the idea that demanding a two for Trent Williams when the Faneca rule applies here and that ruins some leverage and he didn't play last year might not be reasonable. Where are you at on that?
Well, listen, are they wrong for asking for it? No. Would they, if they're demanding that and saying there's no negotiation unless we start there, yeah, I think that would be somewhat problematic. It sounds like from everything I've heard, and I know J.P. Finley, you know, wrote this, that there's multiple options and multiple scenarios and solutions, as I've always kind of talked about, right? I mean, I at one point before Carolina acquired Russell Okung, I said, hey, you know, why don't you maybe try and, you know, figure out a way to get Trey Turner, their guard, maybe trade one problem for another, something like that, you know? You can always do different things, just like with the franchise tag. You don't always have to pay two franchise, but you've got to be willing to make it work. I think if they're insisting bottom line, no negotiation, it all ends with a number, yeah, I think that's probably a little too much when you consider his salary, his age, the issues surrounding it, the times in which we live. And again, as I mentioned with you guys the other day, four left tackles are going to go in the first round. I would not, if I was an acquiring team, there's no chance I would pay Trent Williams at 31.5, 16, 17, $18 million a year, pay whatever compensation it is. And when I can pay, you know, 10 to 20% of that and get 80 to 85% of the talent, maybe 90% in one of these first four round guys, I think that's also hurting the market too. So to me, I think the Redskins have every right to do whatever they want to do. I don't think they're being completely unreasonable, but I also think that they're probably going to have to, you know, back down ultimately to make a deal happen when it comes to, you know, actually happening.
Russell, thank you, buddy. Have a good day.
Thank you, guys.
We'll see you, pal. Let's talk baseball, Tommy. Jesse Dougherty covers the Nationals in Major League Baseball for the Washington Post. Nothing doing games-wise, Jesse, but a big accord, it sounds like, was reached last evening. Update us, the Major League Baseball and the Players Association sounds like they have an understanding here. Give us the details.
Yeah, it sounds like based on multiple reports that, you know, there is an understanding right now of how this is going to go down. I think, you know, start time for the season, some other, you know, wrinkles of this have not yet worked out. But the biggest thing for the players is that, you know, from a service time perspective, that's, you know, that dictates when guys can reach free agency. Even if there were to be no baseball this season, MLB plans to award players a full year of playing. So guys like Mookie Betts would then become free agents, but possibly without ever playing for their current team. You know, he's with the Dodgers, but could never play with them. And that could have big ripple effects. So I think in terms of, you know, player rights and labor, you know, labor fairness, I mean, that was a big move for the players right there.
Look, I don't have a better way to say this. I'm happy for them that is the case, genuinely. I'm not particularly surprised if, in fact, there's got to be a give and a take for the owners if they're not going to get paid if the season gets canceled beyond that prorated portion of the year. But it means we could have seen the end of Aníbal Sánchez, Kurt Suzuki, Adam Eaton, Michael Taylor, Asdrubal Cabrera, Sean Doolittle, Zimmerman. I mean, I could go down the list. I hate it. And I hate a lot of things about this whole situation. But that's all I got for you, Jesse. I mean, it just, if I'm a GM, by the way, and I traded for Mookie Betts with a prospect for one year to rent him, that's a disaster.
Yeah, it's really tough. And I know, like, from a fan perspective, like you said, Grant, I mean, it's good because, like, we know that it's fair and we know that this is how it should work out, but you're missing out on, you know, all those years. And, you know, you could even spin that further. Like, a guy like Juan Soto, he potentially, and I don't want to sound any alarms, but, like, potentially could play 6 years in D.C., and you potentially could miss one full one in this case. So I think it's, like, from a fan team perspective, it's a huge bummer. players too. I'm sure Ryan Zimmerman, Cerbo Cabrera, Sean Doolittle would love to play this season with the Nationals without complication or having to restructure their deals when, that was already, worked out in terms of options and whatnot. So, all around, it's a huge mess. And you're right. If you're the Red Sox right now and you trade in Mookie Betts for prospects, then, you're thinking, or Dodgers rather, that you traded prospects to the Red Sox for Mookie Betts, you're thinking, wow, we might have just traded away some guys who are really going to help us in the future for a guy who may never suit up for us. That's really sticky. I mean, that's a really tough situation.
Looking forward, do you get the sense Major League Baseball now might be a little bit more realistic? This, to me, was the first major stroke of, okay, we're acknowledging that the world is on fire here, and we may not be able to do things the first week of May, like I said a couple days ago.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, obviously, we're learning more about this all the time, but, the first thing we heard of it was a two-week delay. It would start April 10th. And I think at the time there was a lot of skepticism. I think the league was maybe smart in the sense they didn't have to push the panic button, but also acknowledge that it could be longer. And now we know they're putting in contingency plans that could go into place if the season's completely banged. And that's obviously a really scary scenario for everyone, just because it would mean that the world's not back to normal first and foremost. But in terms of being realistic about this and facing the problem head on and having realistic expectations of how this could play out, I think this potential deal that we're getting out and trickled out in reports is certainly a signification that the league is really starting to grapple with this and starting to really face it head on and see what it could be.
Jesse Docherty of the Post, multitasking, writing now about COVID-19 as well. Thank you, Jesse. Much appreciated.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
See you, buddy.
Let's talk some college hoops and some Maryland basketball, should we? Chris Nockey is with us right now. He is the color commentator on their radio broadcast. Chris, thanks for a couple moments. The reason we actually wanted to get you on a few different things, but I saw in my Axios newsletter that I get, they did like a mock tournament where they used their experts and some kind of permutations, and they went through the bracket basically as they set it up. They had Maryland losing in the national championship game to Baylor, I think it was. But they had them getting to the title game. I wonder what you think maybe this group would have been capable of if there was a tournament.
Well, I mean, it's all hypotheticals now, Grant, and I appreciate you having me on. It's sort of whether you want to take the macro or micro look. They played their best game of the season in the last game that they played against Michigan. So usually that means good things, moving forward. Obviously, you have to navigate the Big Ten tournament, figure that out. But, I mean, they had all the pieces. They had, had a guy inside playing at an All-American level. They had a senior point guard having his best year. And they had a bunch of complementary pieces that all could make plays. So, I mean, they had as good a chance as anybody.
Do you feel like this was kind of the turning point, I think, for this Maryland program, right? I mean, you go back to Turge a few years ago, they get to the Sweet 16 and kind of hadn't replicated that success. This felt like a special group at times, Chris, despite maybe some of the games where they would get down, but they'd always come storming back, and senior leadership, and you mentioned Jalen Smith. This felt like maybe a launching point here for kind of the new age of Maryland.
Well, you always hope that's the case, Danny. And the problem is that the ebb and flow of college basketball anymore, guys come, and more importantly, guys go so quickly. Yeah. And so next year you're looking at Cowan obviously is gone. A very good possibility that Jalen Smith enters the NBA draft. So now you've got to kind of retool like a lot of other programs do that are losing guys right and left. So, you always hope to keep some sort of continuity and continuity of excellence as well, where you're perennially top 10. I think that if Jalen Smith came back, they'd be just fine. I just don't know that that's going to happen.
Normally at the end of every school year, the NCAA take $600 million and it divvies it up through Division I programs. This year, they're only going to be able to divvy up $225 million. Now, the tournament actually gives them 75% of their funds. They've got a bunch of money coming from a portion of cash that they set aside years ago. But if you look at D2 programs, I mean, they're going to get $30 million less than they normally did, about $14 million. D3 programs, that's $22 million less, about $11 million. So not having a basketball tournament could hurt a swimmer at one of these schools. Mm-hmm. That means scholarships. That means everything. I'm wondering, Chris, just how long we'll be feeling the ripple effects, you think, in terms of college sports from this fallout?
I'm really glad you mentioned that. The NCAA tournament funds 80-85% of all non-revenue sports. So effectively what happens is this is the sort of thing that buys field hockey sticks and lacrosse sticks and you mentioned the all-important scholarship money. This is devastating for it's not even D2 and D3. You're talking about lower level D1 teams. You know, you work your ass off to get to the NCAA tournament, you qualify, and you think you're going to get that big nut from being in the first round that will sustain you, that will allow you to fund so many different things, and then it's all taken away from you. I mean, it's heartbreaking, and it is real, real cash. That is big time dough right there.
Yeah, and I feel for the seniors who, you know, don't get another crack at this thing. You know, that's the shame of it all. Chris, always appreciate the time, dude. Stay safe out there, man. Thank you.
All right, boys. Thanks.
Be well. There's Chris Nockey. That is your Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny right here on 106.7 The Fan. Next, ahead of our movie club convo at 12:45, what Ron Rivera said this week about the quarterback competition that could be brewing in Washington. You are listening to The Fan. If you follow 106.7 The Fan, you know this already, because this was tweeted out a little while ago. But we will be working on the weekends for you. We are trying to keep you company as best as possible and give you guys as much to listen to as we can. So all of your favorite shows and radio hosts from the daily lineup on 106.7 The Fan are going to be hosting a weekend show for you starting this weekend. And what is, I think, fascinating and cool about this is that we're all kind of thrown into a blender and jumbled up, and we'll be hosting with random members of the rest of the day's staff. So, on Saturday from 9 to noon, JP Flame and Bish from the Junks will be hosting together. From noon to 3, Chad from Chad Dukes versus the World and Old Money Metal Cakes from the Junks will do a show together. And then on Sunday, you and I are working, but I am on from 9 to noon co-hosting with one Eric Bickle, and you will be on from noon to 3 breaking things down with Uncle Pete Medhurst.
That is indeed true. It's kind of like you're still doing shows, obviously, but it's not quite wife swap, but it's on that level, right? It's like partner swap when it comes to doing shows. I mean, Chad does 4.5 hours every day by himself, which is, you know, under talked about how difficult that is. So he's working with old Flakes. It reminds me of our 8, 9, 10 hour, whatever you want to call it, marathon shows we were doing as long as the Redskins lost. Except we don't have to do it for that long. We're just kind of, you know, mixing it with people we don't normally get to chop it up with. So it's fun.
I texted EB and I said, listen, man, I said, you're a legend and people want to hear more from you than me. I said, so I'm just along for the ride. I'm going to ride sidecar. I'll speak when spoken to. You do whatever you want to do. And he basically said, no, I'm good.
No, I'm straight on that.
You know, like he was like, nah, honestly, it's fine. Let's just whatever you want to do. Like I'll sit there. Like that was kind of the response I got.
Okay.
I mean, that's these guys have lasted forever for a lot of reasons. Namely, the Junks are so talented, but there isn't much ego with them. They kind of just go by fly by night, and they're great to work with. But that's how easy they are to work with. He's like, no, you do it, you know, talk about whatever you want. I kind of just care about the coronavirus, so let's just talk about that a lot.
Exactly.
It was a hilarious, I should just post the text exchange.
I was going to say, for him to do it, you got 3 hours of corona talk, just one way or the other. You're basically
which I'm
just
fine with.
Yeah, I mean, and to pull back the curtain a little bit, the things that make, especially with the Junks, but the thing that makes shows go is less about, you know, the content. Obviously, like a major Redskins news happens, we talk about major Redskins news and people will tune in for that. But day to day in general, when there's not a major news situation, you're basically looking for passion and interest and intrigue from a host of a show, right? And so you got to sit through a lot of golf talk, but it means Eric Pickle's fired up. So you tune in for that because it's like a drug. You know what I mean? Like, if you love Chad, you're going to hear some MMA things. I don't care about MMA at all. I'll listen to Chad talk about MMA because it's entertaining. You know what I mean? So, like, whatever fires Eric Pickle up, you do that because that's entertaining radio.
Absolutely. So I'm going to be with EB from 9 to noon on Sunday. I would say that, you know, it's early, but it's really not. I mean, I always wake up early on Sundays. When you get a baby, you don't really sleep in much anyway.
Yep.
So it'll be easy. The noon to 3 time slot for you, I worry about a little bit, because that's probably prime time for kids being active in a house.
So that's right in the middle. Yes, the oldest will be a complete pain in the butt, as he's been for, you know, every second of every day since this whole thing started. But it does coincide with the youngest nap time a little bit. So that's why I said, hey, if it's not too much trouble, I'd love to be able to do that shift, because it's easier to manage one, right? It's way more difficult to manage two that have dramatically and drastically different needs, but both require constant care and attention. So the fact that the youngest will hopefully, knock on wood, be napping during part of that show anyway, is the reason I opted for it.
But that's the big news, that you will be able to listen
to
Grant and Danny. We're split up on Sunday, but to the entire staff on Saturday and on Sunday, and that means that our producers are working hard behind the scenes an extra day as well.
That's right.
As we try to keep you guys company and take good care of you during this pandemic that is raging on in this weird time where there's not a lot that is normal for you. I mean, there are very few things in your life that are the same today as a few weeks ago. Hopefully, the fact that you can turn on the radio and hear the shows that we do and hear our voices and the Junks and Chad, hopefully that is one of those things that kind of gives you a little bit of normalcy and just a tiny smidgen of a feeling that everything is going to be okay. Elsewhere in sports, speaking of something EB will probably want to talk about because it is coronavirus related.
That is right. Yeah.
This weekend, Major League Baseball's owners and the Players Association struck a deal. We just talked to Jesse Docherty about this, but I wanted to get into a couple of the details from this. So basically the teams came together with their owners, talked to the Players Association. Jeff Passan broke this news last night. I don't want to call this like a new CBA agreement, but it's effectively like a CBA for whatever happens when they reconvene. The players agreed to an advance of $170 million over the next 2 months. What's going to happen is about 4% of their total salaries of a full season are going to be paid to them while they're not doing anything, is what I can gather. Prorated salaries for however many games end up being played the rest of the way. If the season is completely canceled and there is no season, players are going to keep the advance that they're getting now, that 4%, but they cannot sue and do anything to get the remainder of their salaries. I guess a team, theoretically, could be nice and just pay players anyway. I'm not really sure why they would do that.
Right.
I can't imagine anybody will. But there will be no lawsuits to try to get that money. That was part of the agreement yesterday. The exchange then was that the owners agreed to credit the players with as much service time this year in 2020 as they compiled in 2019. So what does that mean? If the season gets canceled and you claimed and accrued a season of active roster pay last year, you get a year towards your free agency. So think about it this way. Anybody with 1 year left on their deal, if the season is canceled, doesn't still owe their team 1 year. They just become a free agent and will basically have all of the guys that were just traded or signed one-year deals back in free agency, having never played a snap or a down, in football parlance, a single pitch seen, a single moment in the outfield or infield, a single at-bat. It's never happened. Mookie Betts could not be a Dodger and be a free agent again at the end of the year, which is just craziness.
So I hate that part of it. Now, I understand why this happened. I get all that. I understand labor peace. I understand that this had to be worked out. And it's impossible to ask the owners, hey, go ahead and pay these guys, because the players need money. I mean, like the Bryce Harpers of the world are fine. They've got, you know, tens of millions of dollars and a much up front, and, you know, Rendon and Trout and all the superstars, right? But everybody else down on major league minimum, you could probably use a paycheck at some point. So I get why this happened. It rings a lot of similarities to the NFL Players Association, by the way, that just agreed to a new CBA. But I digress. I get all that. What I want, though, is for people that are on one-year deals to still be on those one-year deals. If baseball isn't played, I want this roster, this team that's been put together, to play again. I get why it's not happening, because of a bunch of logistics, and this is basically it's like not going to court for the owners, right? This is just I'm settling to make this go away. But, man, the most prime example, of course, is Mookie Betts and the Dodgers going all in, and I have no sympathy for the Dodgers. I hope they lose every game. But thinking about it from a national perspective, you touched on earlier, all these vets who don't have that long of a window, that just closed without them playing a game. That is something.
Yeah, I don't like it either. I don't know that you can tell players, though, we're not going to pay you for this season and you don't get to accrue the year. Like, there had to be an agreement.
No, I get it.
And you have to give to get. But, darn, nothing about this situation is good, and this, in the grand scheme of life, is a small deal, but I will add it to the pile of my growing frustrations, is what I would say.
I think that's well put, yeah.
it could be the end of the road for a lot of players that you thought you were going to get one more year out of. It will make for a really compelling free agency a year from now. But again, this is only in the event that a year is canceled. Although, at this point, you're only getting a half season at best probably anyway. Mm-hmm. So if we just have an abbreviated season or some type of tournament, or we start with a playoff bracket of sorts, I mean, those players are free agents anyway and able to leave. So it's going to be tough. But your reactions, though, to that, to the fact that guys like, let's say, Adam Eaton, if there is no baseball this year, who had 1 year left as a National, could just be a free agent and move on next season as they were planning to otherwise. 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny. Our movie club at 12:45 today. We watched Don Verdeen last night. We've got your reports, and if you want to chime in, you can. At Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny, with your thoughts on the film. You're listening to The Fan. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Did you notice yesterday, so Major League Baseball without its opening day to allow people to enjoy and fall back on, in lieu of all the openers that should have been happening, had MLB programming. For every team, they got basically one classic game to air on their regional networks and on the national networks. So the Orioles in Baltimore chose their 2014 Division Series Game 2 against the Tigers, 7-6, where Delmon Young hit an unbelievable double and Camden Yards was rocking. I don't think I need to tell anybody listening to this show what the Nationals game was. How about the World Series Game 7 in 2019, that time where Zach Greinke got pulled and Howie Kendrick hit the foul pole and then the boys pulled away.
That'll
for a 6-2 win. But some of the great baseball games in recent history, playoffs, game 163s, regular season finales, on TV yesterday. I tuned in just in time to watch Jose Bautista's bat flip game where the Blue Jays
who'd they beat?
They beat the Rangers.
Rangers.
In fact, I've realized, you know, remember when we were having that conversation about being at a rib joint when Tom Malone threw that game?
Yes.
And it was crazy that I recalled, like, the stat line.
Yeah, yeah.
I've realized
GZQ, right?
Yeah, but the last couple weeks I've realized I don't have a lot of skills. One amazing skill that I have is remembering exactly where I was while watching sporting events. I was sitting next to Scott Smith in the Fox 5 D.C. offices getting ready for some Redskins show when Jose Bautista flipped his bat. I remember exactly where I was for that. I don't know if that's a skill or not, but it's definitely something I've got in the chamber.
Well, when he started his bat flip, I was in one room, and then I walked like around the block and got back home, and then the bat just landed when he was done with it. That thing was, I mean, it was ridiculous. The amount of time he took, he waited and waited and waited and waited, waited even some more, and then flung that thing with his left hand like it was on fire.
As people, I think, would assume, I loved that moment, and you probably hated it, right?
Despised it. It's awesome to be excited. Now you made yourself a target, and you got yourself plunked probably next year, and they're going to carry a grudge forever. Very avoidable situation. Easy to celebrate without showing people up.
They moved on to the ALCS and got eliminated one round later. Real quick, wanted to get into some thoughts and quotes from Ron Rivera that we played in short yesterday but didn't get much chance to react to. Starting with him being excited about the potential of his two young quarterbacks. He was on the radio on WFNZ in Charlotte. The new head coach of the Redskins, public comments for the first time since they traded for Kyle Allen, and here's what he said about his quarterback room.
I was only going to camp believing, but they're going to compete. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, nobody knows what's going to happen. So we've just got to get ourselves ready and really like who we have in terms of our young quarterback. But Kyle's also a young guy that's got a live arm that understands the game, understands how we do things. So I'm excited about what this potential could be.
Do you get the feeling that I do that he's listening a lot to Scott Turner right now, the first-time offensive coordinator? You know, in another clip that you'll hear in a second, he talks about Scott's real high on him or he's comfortable with Scott. You know, I feel like there are other backups that they could have probably brought in on the cheap, but this is a guy that Scott Turner liked, that he has worked with. He's your OC. Rivera's a defensive-minded coach. I know he's never done this before. He called plays for about a month last year, but I really think Rivera is empowering Turner and trying to give the young coordinator a lot of influence here.
And it's entrusting and empowering. I think that's the key word. That's something that the Redskins as an organization have not really done, right? Not necessarily with coaches. I mean, there's guys that have deserved respect that are having or have had autonomy or haven't, et cetera. But just generally, you always got the feeling like the scout comes back with a report, and then whoever's in charge, whatever grand poobah, is like, thank you so much for that. I have some room in my special trash can filing cabinet that I'll make sure I use that too. And they're just going to do what they want, right? This feels like that. So if a guy's good enough to be your OC, then he's good enough to give you input on these sorts of things. And you got to trust him until he shows you that he can't be trusted.
I think this was a strength of Gruden's. You know, Gruden was always very comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I did like him a lot, this was not just as a coach, as a guy. I always felt like he was great at letting things slide off his back. You know, I hear chirping. I know people are talking S behind my back, and I allow it to get to me, and it causes me tension, anxiety. Jay Gruden's not that guy. He just does not care.
And
I think at Redskins Park, at a fairly conniving workplace with people stabbing you in the back and trying to get over on each other at times, I thought that served him pretty well. This was Rivera on WFNZ in Charlotte speaking to Kyle Allen on why they traded for the QB who last year threw 17 touchdowns and 16 picks in his first season on the field.
You know, Kyle fits what we do. He understands our system. You know, Scotty Turner's our offensive coordinator. We're using the system that we had basically had in place for 9 seasons. And Kyle's a young quarterback. He's had some success. You know, he's good in the locker room. He understands what I'm looking for. He understands what Scotty's looking for. So hopefully we can take that and use it to our advantage with our new team.
Scott and Kyle, as a tandem, the Turner-Allen relationship. If Turner is really high on him, mm-hmm. I wonder if that's enough to get Rivera thinking, well, if he loves him, let's just see. Maybe he does have a chance to have a shot here.
Yeah.
Or is it as simple as, I inherited Dwayne Haskins. He's the owner's guy. He's going to be my guy. I think he's better at football anyway. One of these guys went 15th overall, and the other one didn't get drafted. End of story.
Yeah, and you and I have disagreed about this when this has come up just generally. But to me, the biggest argument for somebody saying he knows the system, it means so that if and when he plays, we'll be fine, right? And other people are going to, and I think you've argued with me, and there's validity to it, by the way, to say, no, he's there to help mentor and help learn, help teach, and all those other kinds of things. But to me, when I hear Ron Rivera talk, and he uses his we're all going to compete type rhetoric, I think that's really how that guy is 24/7. And when I hear he knows the system, he fits what we do, meaning that when it comes time, he'll play and he'll play well, that's how I see it. So I could 100% see a scenario where, and it's, by the way, it's not crazy that Haskins would struggle without appropriate practice time, without any of the normal reps in the offseason and everything that comes to it in a brand new system, that if we're not getting the results we want in 5 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 10 weeks, whatever it is, Kyle Allen will be plug and play, and we could have one of these situations on our hands.
Yeah, I still say he's not going to play this season, but I'm with you on the thinking. Look, you go back through his 2019, and there was enough good in there that it's not a wonder to me what Scott Turner's thinking. And to your point, if I'm going to have to get guys up to speed as fast as possible, I might as well do it with someone who already knows the language. I don't have to spend any time coaching or teaching Kyle Allen about my system or why I do the things I do or what I'm thinking on this down and distance. He knows all that. And I think because of that, the trade for him, honestly, he's more valuable to the Redskins this offseason than he probably would have been in any other offseason. The Grant and Danny Movie Club returns with movie number 9, I believe it was, last night. Don Verdeen was the film. What did we think? What are we going to watch this weekend? We'll find out next. The Grant and Danny Movie Club at 1 o'clock. John Walton, the voice of the Washington Capitals here on 106.7, the Fan on your flagship station for the Caps. He'll broadcast himself doing something in his home. And at 1:30 today, Redskins long snapper Nick Sundberg joins us to play Two Truths, One Lie right here on The Fan. John Walton, Caps broadcaster, on the show in 12 minutes to continue our series of your local play-by-play voices, calling the action of themselves doing a household chore. Right now on Grant and Danny, though, it is time for our movie club. Every day at 12:45, we recap the movie we assigned to you the previous night. So if you're watching along with us, you'll enjoy the discussions. You can also take part in the convo. If you watch any of these films and you've got a thought, we'll get to your calls. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067 during this segment every day. We can also read some tweets. I've got one to get to that I've already seen from someone who watched Don Verdeen with us last night. This was a film that came out in 2015. I'd never heard of it. I didn't know it existed. Tom suggested it after bumping into it a couple days earlier. And I enjoyed it, Danny, I got to tell you. So it's directed and written by Jared Hess. You may not know him by name, but he is the guy that wrote and directed Napoleon Dynamite, which is interesting because this had a Napoleon Dynamite feel to it. Mm-hmm. I actually kind of thought a couple times, without knowing that he directed both, like, this is kind of Dynamite-y. And sure enough, it's the same guy. He also did Nacho Libre, which was one of my favorite Jack Black flicks way back in the day when he was a luchador wrestler in 2006. But it's super dark, I would say.
Yes.
It is also, funny is the word, I guess, but like things that aren't meant to be funny are funny. Characters are just so weird and unique that you kind of laugh at them less than with them. Sam Rockwell, who I really like, was awesome in this movie. And Will Forte, who I hadn't seen in years as a pastor
he
in this
great.
Movie, is perfect. Danny McBride has about the range of Jahidi White. However, Danny McBride, I thought, was really good in this as well. This was an awesome role for him. So that's kind of the people in the cast that I recognized. I would give this, I would say, maybe 6.5 to 7 Buffalo Wings out of 10. Definitely worth a watch. Not something I would have ever watched if not for this activity that we're doing. But I think Thom got us back on track.
Well, the guy that stole the show to me is Jermaine Clement,
from
Flight of the Conchords.
Yes.
His character, a sort of ne'er-do-well Israeli person, it doesn't make any sense until you kind of see him in this stuff, increasingly raises the stakes for some of the impropriety. He's kind of the devil on the shoulder of Sam Rockwell's character. I think starts out with good ideas and intentions to – in a lot of ways, but then descends into some pretty despicable behavior kind of in the name of good and sort of keeps getting darker and darker. It's a send-up of, and you walk a fine line here because you don't want to just make fun of religion in general, right? Because it's easy fodder and you can, there's a lot of traditions and things that you can mock, but it's a specific kind of, I say subgenre of it, the snake oil salesman, the religious person, right? They're battling for parishioners. They're battling for, attention. And there's still all the same trappings of regular, sort of corporate society, but just happens to be the drug they're selling is religious artifacts. And Sam Rockwell plays this guy, Don Verdeen, that's a religious archaeologist who's gone all over the world and is basically finding all these religious artifacts that proves the existence of that everything in the Bible is true as written, right? And it's a delicate balance, I think, to not be offensive, just making fun of religion in general, but it's that sub portion of kind of this element of the world that I think is very crafted, very well done, I would say. I really like this movie. It's got that, it's not slapstick, it's not Will Ferrell improvising his way through a scene. It's not Step Brothers or those.
No, it never gets there with the cast and kind of the way.
It's dark comedy, yeah.
Yeah, but the way, like, the costumes and the way people are dressed and their hair and stuff, you kind of feel like we're headed in that direction. But you don't really. It doesn't get to that point. Look, as someone who goes to church every Sunday and is religious, and I could just, there's nobody at the in this, not to get too deep here, but like, there's no group of people, in my opinion, that are, like, more easy to make fun of, and it's just okay in our society than, like, these jerks who have chosen to try to live their life in a religious manner. Like, it's kind of silly how now people view folks who are religious. But I think that the Christ-like folks that go to church and want to better themselves and want to get closer to God or whatever it is that they believe in, like, those people understand that this isn't making fun of that. It's making fun of, as you said, kind of the people that are preying on that.
It's artfully
done. Benefiting from it financially or otherwise. So,
yes.
Completely understand what you're saying. I really did think it was just really well done. Thom, you suggested this movie, so we've got to give you the floor here.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was one of those things where you've gotten past the trending or the brand new on Netflix, where you have to go into the actual categories.
And you got to dive.
I was scrolling through, and I go, how have I never seen this movie? How have I never seen anyone talk about it? You look it up, it only did $31,000 at the box office. It's got all these great actors. And what I loved was that now knowing that Righteous Gemstones is something that Danny McBride is doing, I have to look at that movie as almost being like a precursor to the idea that gave us Righteous Gemstones. And I thought Sam Rockwell was great. One of my favorite scenes is when they finally get the reveal of the statue that they've paid for, and they open it up. It looks nothing like the picture.
Yeah.
I mean, there weren't a ton of massive laughs in the movie, but when they did have a laugh, it was always a big one, and I enjoyed it. I would give it probably a 7 out of 10 rating as well.
Danny, did you give your rating out of 10?
I did, but I'm right in line with you guys. 7 out of 10 okay. Carbohydrates. A surprisingly strong flick.
Dar, did you play ball yesterday, or what would you say about Don Verdeen?
I have to admit, I fell asleep watching it, doing my taxes.
Well, yay. Doing your taxes is not ideal. You know, you don't have to do those until July now, right? You're getting ahead of the ball here?
Don't get him started.
Don't get me started.
Don't get him started.
Oh, no.
I kind of want to get him started, actually.
Is there a long story there that you don't want to get into?
Yeah, we have to break.
Okay. I'm going to double-click on that at some point. It just isn't now. So here's the suggestion that came from actually our buddy Wookie of the Year, longtime listener and Twitter Hall of Famer on the Grant and Danny Radio Show.
Indeed.
He suggested that we watch Tiger King, which everybody's talking about, Murder, Mayhem, and Madness, the Netflix doc, several episodes long, that because we have the long weekend, in lieu of like a traditional film, we could do Tiger King this weekend, and then that could be our Monday. Because it is a documentary movie. I mean, it's not a show. So we could quantify it as a film and then watch it this weekend and talk about it Monday at 12:45.
That's not crazy to me. Because I want to watch it. It's in the queue, and everybody's into it. I mean, how many eps is it, do we know? How many Mike Epps?
I thought I heard 4, but, I mean, it wouldn't be longer. Those Netflix series are generally, like, the documentaries could be 6 or 8. I'm guessing it's Don't Bleep with Cats type length.
Okay, yeah, if it's Making a Murderer, season 2, where nothing happened, then I could say, hey, maybe we can't do this in a weekend. But if it's a shorty, yeah, let's get it done.
All right, so let's knock it out this weekend. That will be the assignment. Everybody's talking about it anyway, so we'll watch that. And just to get to, I mentioned there was a tweet on the movie from the movie club today. Wynn said that he'll watch anything with Danny McBride. He just started The Righteous Gemstones himself. He says Don Verdeen, more Eastbound and Down mixed in. Verdeen was very Napoleon Dynamite. 6.5 glasses of wine out of 10.
He's a sommelier at our favorite place, Bourbon Steak.
Yeah, the sommelier at Bourbon Steak knows a thing or two about some wine.
Yeah,
by the way, I need
man.
To go to Bourbon Steak maybe to celebrate the end of all of this whenever that happens, like on day one.
And we had this
the
combo
largest
last night.
Steak I've ever eaten.
Yeah, my wife and I had this combo last night. I said, when this is over, what's the first place we're going to? And that was my answer. I said, we're going to Bourbon Steak. That's what
Love
we're doing.
That. John Walton calls Caps games. Not right now, though. Next, our series, Broadcasters Broadcasting from Home. Walton calling play-by-play of himself doing something in his house. 1:30 today, Nick Sunberg. Two truths and a lie right here on Grant Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.